Oh, you know what we do need to talk about at some point?
What's up?
Anthony Rizzo being anti-vax, even though he had cancer.
Oh, yeah. I meant to actually mention that when you're talking to Tawny, is that, I mean, honestly, I don't want to hear at least 90% of baseball men's opinions. It's
Nope.
only going to make me not like them.
Yep. I couldn't,
Like,
like, my mind was blown when I found that out. I'm like, I what? There was someone else who came out as, oh, a bunch of the Phillies are like pissed off with the vaccine because they think so. They all got, I guess they got their first dose or something. And then a few of them got injuries and they're convinced that they got their injuries from the vaccine. It's like, no. The only thing I agree with them is like they probably should have had time off, given time off from MLB, like after they got vaccinated, because I don't know, people's reactions to the vaccine are different, but holy fuck. And now they're refusing to get their second dose, so they're not even gonna meet the fucking threshold. Sports people are so weird.
shout out to the WNBA, who is 99% vaccinated,
Yes, as
I think.
always, honestly.
Continuing to set the bar for all sports leagues.
Forever.
The broadcast, the biggest podcast in Vancouver, pretty much.
We participate in light misandry. Get out of here with that. Sexism.
All of our societal structures are designed in ways to inherently prejudice women.
I don't like to be bamboozled.
Hi, Georgia. It's Troy Stetcher here. Thank you for labeling me the short king.
Nick actually just got the sweatshirt that says Mock Girl Summer.
I think it's amazing what you guys are doing, which I'm having a lot of fun.
Hi, and welcome to the broadcast. This is our 50th episode, and we have our rotating cast of broads because we don't have Sam this week. But she claims she'll be here next week for our year anniversary. We'll see, because she has like a real actual job. Not saying that like Georgia and I don't, it's just like less high stakes.
Yes, Sam's not here, but that's okay. We're gonna have fun. We're gonna chat about sports as per usual.
All right. We had a really nice review this week. Georgia and I have both just been like mentally going through it. I don't know if like I want to blame it on astrology or anything. But
your reviews are nice. They make us
the review was very nice and it meant a lot to us.
It was a very lovely review from Chin Not Chan by Apple Podcasts. The review is titled "Came for the Canucks Dog Review, Stayed for the Troy Stetcher Stands." 5 stars. The Leafs offer their own unique view in the hockey media sphere, which tends to be pretty homogenous, in brackets, lots of white dude hot takes. They often discuss important social issues in hockey, which tend to be swept under the rug by a lot of media trying to keep their access to teams. In a way, they're sort of the conscience of Canucks Twitter and have helped push the beat reporters to hold themselves and the team more accountable. Just ask Durant or JPAT. Often their discussions help humanize the experience that the straight white male perspective misses. The broads are an example of why representation matters, both for women and minorities who enjoy the sport. People of all backgrounds love hockey, but the sport, and in particular the NHL, does not often love them back, as the girls have discussed on the pod before. We need more voices like theirs, not fewer. Otherwise, hockey is forever and will never go beyond a performative gesture. It's also a good reminder that hockey can be enjoyed in many different ways. Even if you're a stats nerd, you can appreciate the vibes of this pod. Anyway, I read this and sobbed. So thank you for your review. And keep sending them to us, you guys. Like, even if you have feedback, like constructive feedback that you want to send us, we love to get that. We also just love to hear what you think about the episodes that we do. You can also sign up for our Patreon where you get extra content. Last week, we talked about doctors in the NHL and Zobin. So if you sign up, you get access to that. And yeah, 5 stars. Send us your reviews.
Lots of fun hockey going on. Lots of white dudes on skates running into each other at full speed. Let's do that hockey. Come on.
Since we are technically Canucks podcasts, we're not obligated to talk about anything. This is our own podcast. We do what we want. But we're going to talk about the AHL team, which is the most anticlimactic thing They released their branding today. They're the Abbotsford Canucks, and their logo is the Johnny Canuck drawing, and it's on a jersey, and it looks ugly.
Yeah, so background for people who aren't in the market. The Canucks farm team used to be in Utica, which is in New York State, so it's obviously really far away. So it means that like they can't do same day call-ups. You have to have at least a day for players to get there. And so there was a decision to move the team closer. That has been kind of complicated because there aren't many teams on the West Coast for if you put a team, say, in Abbotsford, for them to play. So it means that farm team is traveling more. So there's like pros and cons to doing it, but ultimately the Aquilinis decided this year to do it. And part of that, I think, was, excuse me, in response to what we've talked about before, which is this year was not a great year for team cohesiveness. And there was kind of a breakdown between the players and management and blah, 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 blah. So they decided to kind of really stamp that out, and hence why the seedings are here, and hence why they kind of decided this now is the time to move the team to Abbotsford. And Abbotsford is a suburb of Vancouver, so it's about an hour drive outside the city. And Abbotsford is where there's an airport and there's an annual air show every year. So I think most people thought the team name was going to be something to do with aviation, and they decided on the Canucks. And it's, I don't know. The jerseys are green. It's hard to look good in green. So it's rough.
Yeah, I think that you said that you were wishing they would have been the Aviators and used like an A that was like the Millionaires style. But no. It's obviously easy to like have it, I guess, so you know who their affiliation is. Like the Texas Stars are the same thing. Mm-hmm. And... because actually now the affiliate for the Devils is the Comets, but it used to be like some city in New Jersey Devils, that situation. But it's just no fun. There's so many nouns you could pick from.
It's true. Also, I think people, so the kind of messaging behind the choice is to say, it doesn't matter who you are a Canuck, which is, the larger branding is quote unquote, we are all Canucks. So it's trying to get these guys that come into play. If you're playing in the farm system, you're all working towards the same goal, which is you are a Canuck, blah, 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 blah. Like theoretically I get that, but also have some fun or kind of do something. Cause even, okay. So even if they decided to keep it as the Abbotsford Canucks, which also just puts me into flashback of like minor hockey, because all of us wanted to just be the Canucks because that's what you do when you can name your team in minor hockey anyway. But even if they chose to stick with the Canucks, like make the jersey more fun. Like, I don't know if you saw today, the Portland Winterhawks rebranded mainly because their jersey was, or their logo was based upon the Chicago Blackhawks. So obviously there's issues with Indigenous appropriation there. And then I think even more recently with this Blackhawk stuff, it was really kind of like time to change things. And so they rebranded, and their branding is, the new logo is so expertly done with this image of a, winter hawk or a hawk that has these little motifs to the Pacific Northwest and to Oregon in general, within the design, and it's so well done. And meanwhile, you have, so that got released today and everyone was like, wow, this is awesome. This looks great. And then about an hour later, after a lengthy delay, they were supposed to release it at 10 and then they released it on Instagram late, the Canucks did. They released this design that's just, it's basically just the, like the Johnny Canuck logo is, it, they used to wear it as their shoulder patch logo. I think they just use the V now, but with Johnny Canuck in it, but they just repurpose that. It's like, be original, make it fun, like make it Abbotsford, and that's why you get people wanting to, I don't know, join in or whatever.
Yeah, I think that you definitely, yeah, that makes sense of how you were talking about it, about him wanting to make it like one cohesive branding. But I think that, I mean, obviously I don't know the social dynamics of the Vancouver metro area, but I think that you should have it as something that you want to do, like as its own thing. Like you want to go support the Abbotsford team as opposed to being like, oh, we'll go to the Vancouver minor game, like minor league game, essentially.
Exactly.
Like we'll go see the farm team and like maybe we'll see somebody who's going to be in the NHL one day and be good, as opposed to being like, oh, I want to go see this hockey game because I like this team.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And there's so many things in the Fraser Valley that they could have pulled from, like to make it more unique to that idea, and they chose not to, which like, okay, whatever. It was also very funny that they announced it late, because my entire timeline was just jokes from all these sports media men and complaints about how it was late. And then I just opened up Instagram and the announcement was there. And then I went back to Twitter and people were still complaining.
Yeah, like, the Stockton Heat account posted, I would have delayed that too.
I know, we're like that. The Calgary farm team is already just like roasting us. Tough look. Did you see the picture too that they released? And it's like Francesco and Jim in the jerseys with kids.
That's embarrassing.
It was so bad. It was so bad. I don't even think they did like a video, like a hype video at all. So it was just really funny that they did it at the exact same time that the Portland Winterhawks did, because it was just like night and day. And one is a WHL team, like it is a junior team, and one is an NHL organization. And it was so bad in comparison. And it's just like, oh my God, this team, like what is with their inability to deliver on anything, like in regards to branding or PR, like, I do not understand. But as always, we're fans of this team because we're stuck with them. But oh well.
Yeah. While the Canucks are the new laughingstock of the NHL, previously we had at least like one day where it was the Oilers, because for some reason they decided to trade for Duncan Keith, which we all knew they were going to do.
We said that on the podcast.
We all knew it was going to be bad, but I don't think that anyone prepared for no salary retained on Duncan Keith.
It's a tough look. Very tough look.
I am saying that this is like akin, I think that this is similar to Patrick Kane winning best hockey player at the ESPYs, which is that nobody has watched a hockey game since 2013, because hockey is not popular. And all everybody remembers is like the Blackhawks run in the early 2010s. And they're like, yeah, hockey player, Patrick Kane, sure. And they're like, good defenseman, Duncan Keith, okay. And I mean, that's fine if like you're just a member of the general public. I'm not like going to go on a full like, please like my sports situation. You don't have to be able to name hockey players. That's fine. I do think that if you're an NHL GM, you should not be spending that much money on Duncan Keith, because he won two Norris trophies a decade ago.
Have you seen his stat line? It's just like, it's embarrassing. It's real embarrassing. I'm trying to find this tweet from someone who talked about the press conference, the Ken Holland press conference that he did. He reacted very defensively when people asked him why he traded for Duncan Keith. But then, oh, I can't find it. But someone was like, checked off all the stereotypical like old hockey man responses to why he would pick up Duncan Keith, which majority revolved around like, he's won the cup. He's won the cup. Like experience, like all these just like very traditional Don Cherry-esque hockey concepts. that will exist in perpetuity in hockey. I really don't know what Edmonton was doing.
Especially they don't have a like winning attitude or something. I don't understand. Do they need veteran leadership?
Well,
it's an insult to be like, I think that actually Duncan Keith needs to come in here and tell Connor McDavid how to play hockey. I think that that's our missing link.
Yeah, it's a tough look. I also think that everyone knew that Keith asked to be traded. So they had, like, I just don't understand. I don't understand the deal because you knew he wanted to be traded. You still agreed to fully take on the salary. There's no salary retention. Like, I don't, how is that possible? And that was the choice they made. And they didn't even get anyway,
it's very easy. Yeah. It's very easy to sit here and be like, oh, these NHL GMs, they don't know what they're doing and all that. And I will admit that, like, I am not qualified to be an NHL GM, but I am saying that if you sat me down in like a room and I had to call the Chicago Blackhawks and be like, I wonder if I have any leverage in this trade. You have so much leverage. What are you doing? They should be paying you to take him.
Yeah.
The man is 37 years old and hasn't been good in at least 5 years. He's not going to magically.
I'm just reading Ken Holland's responses. Jonathan Willis from The Athletic tweeted, Holland asked about Keith's analytics. The quote, I don't know if this is a numbers decision. Oh my God.
I do believe that we are all going to shit on Duncan Keith because it's easy to do. And he's going to have a mediocre year. But
yeah,
for what they paid for him, and I'm not even saying that like Caleb Jones, it's just who they lost. And they also lost a pick, I think.
Yeah, it was a conditional third or fourth or something.
Was that going to be like that great or anything?
No.
Just everything else that's included in the whole entire deal. Yeah. It's just like Ken Holland. If you know that you're going to have to show up and defend yourself in your press conference about this trade, maybe think about other aspects of the trade. You're not having to show up like to go to battle.
Have some talking points. And this can all be traced back. Patrick Sharp having his hot girl summer 2014 or whatever, 2014. If you know, you know.
Switching sports, the MLB All-Star Game was this week in Colorado, which is actually important that it was in Colorado because it was initially supposed to be in Atlanta in the Braves' newish stadium. And the MLB chose to change it due to, is it voting?
Yeah, it was restrictive voting, discriminatory voting laws
that were passed. Enacted in Georgia.
Yeah.
So people who say that sports are not political, that is literally the most political you can get. Not even in a situation where it's like it involves people, so it's political.
Yeah.
They changed where it was because of politics.
Yeah.
A huge talking point in general was the Angels' star boy, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Shohei Ohtani, who pitched the first inning, batted leadoff, participated in a home run derby, and then also Stephen A. Smith said some gross stuff about. The thing is that I'm reluctant to always ever even really give Stephen A. Smith the time of day because I know that he exists to create controversy in that kind of realm of journalism where they're just talking to talk and might as well just create controversy because it gives views and all of these things. But he said that he doesn't like approve of Otani, who is Japanese, and not, he like speaks to a translator usually, because obviously speaking a second language to a bunch of people in the press is scary.
Which a lot of baseball players do, by the way. Like there's a lot of Spanish speaking baseball players that have translators. It's not an uncommon thing in baseball.
Yeah. And he said that he doesn't think that he like deserves all the star power that he's getting for being a pitcher that hits homers, because he isn't a good face for baseball, because we're not like hearing him speak in all of this. You can like look up the exact quotes if you want, but that's the general gist of it. It was just a bunch of xenophobic nonsense.
Yeah.
In his normal outraged tone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, yeah, the thing is that there's plenty of people who speak through translators, and there's, especially to the press and whatever. He's 26 years old. He has been with the Angels for about 3 years, and he played in Japan before that. So he like left his home to play in the best league in the world.
He's also like, when we talk about generational talent in hockey, it's like a thing that comes up every 5 years. Like Shohei Ohtani is like, has never been seen in baseball before.
They are talking, and they will be it, they like, were talking about Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
Like in the same sentence. I mean, like he is Babe Ruth times 10.
There is no one else like him in baseball. And it's like, it's truly insane. He hits homers. Like he hit a home run in T-Mobile that went to like the third deck, which is insane. Like 500 feet home runs. And also throws 100 mile an hour fastballs. Like that is, you'll never like.
And if you're not familiar with baseball, like in general,
that's real fast.
The American League and National League like have different rules.
Yes.
Because they're chaotic. So he plays in the American League actually, which in the American League pitchers don't hit, but he hits in a designated hitter slot because he doesn't. Like the reasoning behind it is because pitchers are so focused on pitching and learning how to pitch well and all of the mechanics related to that, they don't want to waste their time hitting, and like pitchers are notoriously bad hitters and stuff. And like, usually it's seen as like a very easy out when you're playing in the National League and there's a pitcher coming up, like a very rare amount of pitchers can hit. Like Madison Bumgarner can hit, and that is one that I can think of.
Stroman can like, hit, I think, kind of. He hit a home run for sure one time, but in the AL,
they just
like,
don't bother, they just don't care. and like the point is that also he's not playing in the National League where it's like, oh, he has to hit like when he's pitching. He play like on days that he is not pitching, he's still hitting because he's that good. Yeah, so he's such a crazy generational talent. He literally hasn't taken batting practice this year. He didn't do well in the Home Run Derby, probably because he hasn't taken batting practice this year.
Yeah.
He's absurdly talented. And I think that people love to criticize. They're like, the MLB, why is it the World Series? They only play in one city in Canada and the US. But the thing is that it's all of the best players from the world. There's so many players from South America. You have players from Japan. But
there's a pitcher in the All-Star game who's from Australia. You have Dutch players.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the best players from all around the world. And it's not as if it, although it is seen as America's game or whatever, it's kind of falling out of fashion in America. The NBA is so much bigger. And like on a larger scale, and Ohtani is bringing that back just by how good he is. He's bringing back people's interest.
Especially young fans.
Yeah. The LA Times put out an article that was about how, like what being Ohtani's teammate is even like.
Oh, it's so cute.
It was so cute. Let me find it. Okay. This was before the pandemic, when Shohei Ohtani was more of a curiosity than a sensation. He could hit, he could not pitch because his elbow recently had been rebuilt. He carried the hopes and hearts of his homeland with him. That embrace had not waned. With one peek out of the window of a team bus, the Angels rookie first baseman understood the magnitude of Ohtani. There were four girls sitting outside the bus sobbing, Jared Walsh said, because they knew he was on the bus. Mike Trout is a pretty big deal, but I've never seen any girl outside the bus sobbing because Mike Trout was on it. I think Shohei might have trumped him there. And Mike Trout is
like the best player in baseball.
And he's also on the Angels, which they're not a good team, but that's a whole other episode.
I think what you're saying about him is like, and about like what the larger conversation is, or what Stephen A. Smith was gesturing to, is this idea of who can access being the face of baseball. Okay, so they have to be, I guess, American. Or at least they have to have an excellent working ability to speak the language, to speak English. And this idea of being the face of baseball and being this marketing tool, it speaks to this idea of, okay, so you only want to market to America or like just English speaking countries? Because that's a weird choice, because baseball is in South America, in mainly just Venezuela, I think, but also throughout the Caribbean. Also, Asia is a huge market. The NBA lucked into Asia with, what's the guy from
Jeremy
Yao Ming? Yao Ming.
Oh yeah.
That broadened the Asian market, and they get so much money from there. So if you want to talk about marketing the league, these are the players that you want to actually market around. Like, and I'm speaking from a very like utilitarian, this is what's good, not just like a sympathetic viewpoint. Like just in marketing in general, you want to do that. This is why all the Marvel movies go to Asia, like, because that's where you make a bunch of money. So, and there's also a huge legacy of baseball in Asia. Like, he's from Japan, but there's tons of Korean players. Like, it's not like it's non-existent there at all. It was really xenophobic. Stephen A. Smith like apologized twice on the day of, I think. And it was especially disheartening, obviously, because of what we've seen increasingly with COVID and violence against Asian people in North America and around the world, like in other places. And so it's especially dangerous. It's dangerous always, but it's especially dangerous right now. And so he apologized. And I think if people want to like read more on it, a really good person to read is June Lee from ESPN, who's a Korean American, but writes really good baseball pieces anyway. I follow him for his baseball stuff, but has spoken super eloquently about this and actually went on some show with Stephen A. Smith to basically like say it to his face, like talk to him in person. And he's a good person if you want kind of a little bit more of a deeper perspective than just me and Mallory. But yeah, I don't know. I guess going back to the All-Star game, how many All-Star games have you been to? I feel like you've been to some.
I've only been to like All-Star related events when it was in KC, however many years ago.
Because every year I forget how fun the Home Run Derby is.
Yeah, I usually watch the Home Run Derby.
It's easily the best All-Star event in sports.
It's so much better now that they switched it, the format, I think, even.
Yeah, because they used
it. Because it used to be anytime you have a hit and it's not a home run, that's an out, mm-hmm. three outs. And they switched it to a timed format here. I love watching kids just completely misjudge fly balls.
One of my favorite parts of the home run derby. The guy in the stands, too, that was jumping to catch one.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
Pete Alonso won the home run derby for the second time. He won when he was a rookie. He's just like a weird dude. What I was going to say about the Ohtani being like the face of baseball or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And that situation is that I would not recognize Mike Trout if I saw him on the street. He is just some white man. And I would maybe or be Pete like, Alonso. That kind of looks like Mike Trout, but I don't know. Especially if he wasn't wearing a baseball hat. Pete Alonso also is just kind of some guy. He's so weird. And also, like, if you didn't watch the Home Run Derby, Pete was just, like, bouncing around the whole time. Yeah, he was, like, really actually, you knew he was going to win. Yeah. From, like, the beginning, because he hit 35 home runs in the first round in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And everybody was just gassed. They were, like, dying. Because that's the only thing that sucks. Was, like, really dying. Because it's hard. Even when you're taking batting practice, which Ohtani doesn't do, it's only, like, 30 seconds or whatever. And you're not really, like, doing it with that same vigor. And Alonso was just bopping around. He was just chilling. He was just like a big kid, just excited to hit some dingers. It was so great.
The other thing that's crazy about him, Izzy told me this yesterday. So he's still under like a rookie contract. I don't know the exact wording or whatever. In
he made more money.
Baseball. He's made more money in home run derbies than he has playing baseball professionally. That's
incredible.
Nuts. So like obviously he's so fucking stoked, like he just doubled his salary, like it's
just so great to watch people do what they love, like and it's just like such a fun youthful format. Like that is like what you do when you're playing like as a kid, like you're oh we're gonna go play home run derby, and here you're playing it to win $1 million.
And it was the other thing was like and back to the Steve Naismith stuff, like the most exciting part of the first round was Juan Soto versus Ohtani. And like,
they're both first language, not like, English.
Yeah. Like, so it's like, that's what's fun. And that's what's getting people involved. So it was interesting. I did think I saw a lot of people tweeting, laughing about the fact that they were singing the national anthem before the home run derby, which that is one of the most American things of all time. But the thing that weirds me out always is like the flying the planes over. I don't get the plane thing.
Super weird. And I hate it when they do that, especially like, I don't know if you've ever been to, it would be an American sports event where this would happen. So like if you were at some game in Seattle where they like fly a stealth bomber over.
Oh my God. That's so weird.
It's so uncomfortable. Like, it is so scary. You're like, ooh, it's disgusting. But also today we are recording this. It's the 14th. That's a Bastille Day. I was in Paris on Bastille Day 2 years ago. They got some weird military shit going on. Like there was this plane professional, like procession.
They had like a military parade.
All of this, Trump was there. Like all historical ones. It was super weird. And like, I do want to say that I'm not saying America is normal, because I literally just said that I had been at a sports game where they flew a stealth bomber over. But I'm saying that other countries are also weird as shit. But it's because
Canada does it too.
Imperialist and weird.
Canada does it too, but it's basically we don't have as many planes. So it's usually just the snowbirds. And it's usually just for like the Grey Cup. Because the other thing is like the rest of our sports are all inside because it's real cold. Yeah. So we can't, like, you don't really see them. And I don't think they really do anything for the Blue Jays. Or at least I can't remember them being in a significant enough like thing for it to happen. The sirens of Lonsdale. But yeah, I think it's just the weirdest thing. But yeah, the French thing is true because Trump was there and saw it and then wanted to have a military parade.
Yes. It was so uncomfortable.
It's really uncomfortable.
They had like these like big tanks and stuff like sitting around, and the kids were like climbing on them and like being like, oh, look at this. Isn't this cool? And they were like handing out like these like French flag things that also had stuff about the military and joining it. And I was like, I thought I wasn't in America right now, but
there was a guy that I was like so in love with when I was in high school. In my like, actually, it was right after I graduated. He was like one of my friend's brothers. He wanted to join the French Foreign Legion, which is like, okay, why was I attracted to this person?
That's so funny.
What? Like, that's, oh my God, that's so embarrassing. Oh well. Should we move on to other world sporting events?
Speaking of Europe and racism.
Yes.
Yikes. It's very difficult because I didn't want England to win because I don't want England to do well in
anything. We had a tough like roller coaster of emotions there at the end, I think.
That was very difficult. Okay, so the Euros happened, which are like the European International Soccer Tournament. not the currency. But the final was Italy, England. Italy ended up winning on penalties
in the UK. So they're playing in Wembley Stadium in London.
I think that, like, we have talked a little bit before about, like, British, like, football culture some, and how
we talked about the Wags,
absurd it is. It was going to be a bad situation either way.
Yeah.
But the main bad situation that we are talking about is the three people who missed penalties for England. It was Sancho, Rashford, and Saka were the ones who missed penalties out of the five that took them, are all young Black men. And the English people dealt with that as dignified as you would expect. And also, Georgia and I are Arsenal fans. We don't want to ever see Saka sad.
It was so sweet boy. Sad.
He's only 19. He's been with Arsenal, like, in the system for however long.
It's so sad.
He's very sweet. But basically, they were subjected to an absurd
immediate racism.
Like, obviously, other English players and stuff were met with general anger. Discontent yeah. and anger and unnecessary being mad about them, like, not taking a penalty or something, as if it wasn't Southgate deciding who was taking penalties. But the abuse that they received was very immediate and very disgusting.
Yeah. I think, like, so the whole game was wild because they scored in, like, the second minute or whatever, or at least really early in the game. I don't exactly remember the time. So they scored really early and they were up. And then Italy came back and then it went to extra time. And then Sancho, so all three of them were brought on as
Saka came on.
Were, like, what are they called?
Substitutes?
Substitutes. We're brought on as substitutes.
Saka was brought Sancho on earlier. Sancho and Rashford were brought on at the very end, like, of extra time.
They the
were
116th on, minute.
Yeah.
Like, super late. Penalties. So Rashford's first touch of the ball in the entire game was when he kicked the ball on his penalty kick. Like, there's a lot to be said about that as a strategy, bringing on people just for penalties, like, and how that functions, because if you're bringing in someone at the end of the game who doesn't necessarily have, like, I don't know, the feel for the game yet, and is just thrust into, like, this and then the World Cup. Like, the World Cup's probably the highest stakes. This is probably the second highest, like, the second highest stakes for them on a national level. That's a lot to be asking for your players. And I think people were rightfully questioning Southgate's decision-making. And then when I was watching it, I hate penalties in general. Like, I get them and I understand why they exist in football and soccer, but I'm an empath. And it just, like, physically hurts me to watch them because you just feel so, so awful. I feel especially awful when they miss the net. Like, if it's a save, then it's like, okay, the goalie is really good. And to be fair, the Italian goalie is, like, won the MVP of the tournament. He's insanely good. But so when Rashford stepped up and he was the first of them to miss, immediately my brain just went, if this goes badly, like, if he's the reason why they don't win, he's going to get death threats and they're going to be racially motivated. He's going to get death threats. And then when Sancho missed, it was like, oh God. And then when Saka missed, it's, you knew what it was going to happen. And I think that's the most devastating thing out of all of this is, like, you knew as soon as they missed, and a lot of people were saying, like, before this, they were British. Once they missed the penalty kick, they're Black. And, like, I saw an author that I really like to follow, her name is Bolu Babaloba, and she tweeted about this. And she said, her thing was, like the stakes for Harry Kane to kick the ball. Like this was the set. I'm paraphrasing what she was saying and adding it to this, but like the stakes for Harry Kane to like kick the ball in a penalty is he scores or he doesn't. And if he doesn't score, people are going to be mad at him. Yes. But that's the thing. But for these black players, if they miss, the stakes are that they have racial abuse hurled at them. So imagine like having to stand up there and do that. No, like they probably knew, or like, and I know that they're not thinking about that in the moment, but that's something that they have to deal with. And how stark is it that we sit there and we watch them and go, God, I hope they score so they don't have people sending horrible things to them and their families. And for Marcus Rashford, defacing murals of him. And it's like, it's horrible. It was horrible, horrible, horrible. And it just was added onto by the fact that like the whole event was fucked. They had people storming into Wembley. Did you see the thing today about Harry Maguire is one of the players on England and his dad was injured in one of the stampedes? Like, jeez. It's so fucked. That's how like chaotically crazy these people are. And you wrap them up in this frenzy and then it's horrible. And all these guys are super young. Like Marcus Rashford's 23. Sancho, I think, is 21. And Saka is 19, like a 19-year-old. And I, like going back to Southgate, like I have no idea why you'd ever stick a 19-year-old as your fifth, as your, with the weight of like the world on his shoulders, especially for people who don't know, like Gareth Southgate, I think it was 96. I don't know if it was a World Cup or Euros, missed a like he didn't score a penalty and it shaped the rest of his life, like the rest of his career. Like it really damaged him. And so knowing that, and then you go, oh, I'm going to stick a 19-year-old. Like I don't understand and I never will, but it was awful. Yeah.
The thing about England, especially, was that England had their like second 11 was better than Turkey, like that situation. Yeah. It's not as if they have a lack of depth. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I mean, nobody deserves this. And it's not as if anything anybody does like could merit that. But Saka is 19. And also Rashford has this huge charity. He is an OBE, which is Order of British Empire or whatever. He's such a nice, genuinely nice person. I don't know anything about Sancho. I'm sorry. But I'm sure you're great.
Yeah. No, and so the Marcus Rashford thing in particular caught on because there was people tweeting. The other side of that is he's become quite an activist. Like the background is basically with the government shutting down schools in the UK earlier last year, it meant that a bunch of kids were going to be without food because they get fed at school. That's just how the system works. And he reacted automatically and was like, wow, there's going to be all these kids without food. So he raised, I think it was like $20 million with an initiative to feed them essentially. And then later on in the year, another thing happened where the government said that they weren't, it was something like with schools closing again, these kids weren't going to have food. And he sent out a tweet and effectively got the government to implement an initiative that's going to feed people. And he's been pretty outspoken, and he was outspoken during the George Floyd stuff, but he's effectively like fed millions of people in America or in America, millions of people in England with his activism, but he's also done it against the Conservative Party. Like he stood up against them. And so there was Tory MPs tweeting stuff like, or saying stuff like, he should have not, like, instead of getting political, he should have been working on his penalties. And so he got a bunch of that stuff hurled at him. And then the other thing that frames all of this is that earlier in the tournament, so England had been kneeling before every game in protest against racism. Or in a sign of solidarity, I guess, for anti-racism. And when asked about it, the British Home Secretary Priti Patel and the Prime Minister both said, like, it's fine to boo them for protesting racism. It's okay to boo them for doing this. And then immediately after, or it might have been the next day, actually, after the Euros, after all these players got racial abuse hurled at them, Priti Patel and Boris Johnson were both like, you can't, like, this is obviously terrible. We stand up for, like, we stand against this stuff. You can't do this. And Tyrone Mings, who's a player on the English team, retweeted, like, quote tweeted Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, and was like, you can't say that people can boo us for standing up for anti-racism and then be like so shocked that it happens when you're the one who's saying like it's okay. It's insane. But yeah, like literally, you just literally had this guy on the team be like, you can't, you have no right to say anything when you did this. And it's just, it really illustrates the performativity, but also just the larger issues at play. And I think there was a really good article in The Guardian today. I retweeted it, but it was this conversation around the fact that all three of these players, Saka hasn't yet, but Sancho and Marcus Rashford both released like these massive statements apologizing. And they're really heartbreaking to read. I teared up reading the Rashford one because it was really heartbreaking and you can just feel his pain, apologizing for missing the penalties, but also like standing up for themselves. And this article in The Guardian was like, why do these guys have to apologize for missing a penalty? Like we demand this of them. We're asking them to do this and they feel like they have to, and they do it. And we don't even ask this of our government. They don't apologize for anything. And it's so interesting to tie like that national identity and what it means to be British and all that kind of stuff onto this football squad and what is demanded from them that's not demanded from the actual government. So it's tough. Hope I never have to watch penalties again.
I guess it's not enough to just like claim to be anti-racist. You need to do things to actually combat racism, that it's always very prevalent. And we've talked about before about its prevalence in sport, but this has been very much a week of it actually very much rearing its head to a point where you can't ignore it. We'll try to provide reading and stuff for you to educate yourself further. And our three stars of the week are Rashford, Sancho, and Saka. Unless you have others.
No, I was going to add one. It's kind of in the context and it's important for in speaking about being anti-racist. So Paige Buckers, I never know how to pronounce people's names, won the ESPY award. I think it was for something like best college basketball player or something. She won it and she spent the majority of her speech talking about how the media doesn't give enough attention to Black women in basketball, Black women in general, and that the media drives narratives and that needs to change. So good for her for doing that. Not everyone would stand up on a stage when they get a trophy and do that. So commending her for her work, and more people need to do it.
So our first one is just the England people all together as one.
Yeah.
Her. And then our third is my boy, Salvador Perez. He's a catcher for the Royals, who hit 27 home runs in the first round of the home run derby. But Pete Alonso hit 35. So
we should also say, shout out to, is it Trey Mancini?
Oh yeah.
Who had cancer last year and then came second in the home run derby.
Came back to lose to Pete Alonso. All right. Reach out to us at BroadscastPod on Twitter, Instagram, BroadscastPod@gmail.com. Subscribe to our Patreon.
Patreon.com/BroadscastPod.
BroadscastPod. that's pretty much it. That's all we got for you this week.
Happy 50th ep.
Happy 50th episode. We 1 year next week. Because apparently we've only taken 1 week off. This is why George and I are suffering.
Next Saturday is
we suffer from like the imposter syndrome in general. And then also I think we are genuinely maybe running out of things we can talk about. I say something and I'm like, I think I've talked about this before because I don't have that many original thoughts at all.
Yeah, I feel like that too sometimes. Well,
so we will be around in the off season. Maybe taking a couple weeks off for our brains. Who knows? Probably not, because
I am going on vacation right. In August.
Anyway. So
it's in the calendar. Bye.